You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
That's what we were trying to play then. As always on the Thursday Wire, it is time to catch up with Justice Minister Andrew Little. This week, Green MP Golrees Gerriman's Electoral Strengthening Democracy Bill has proposed a number of changes to New Zealand's electoral system. A couple of those changes include lowering the MMP threshold from 5 to 4%, outruling overseas political donations entirely, and overturning a ban on prisoner voting. I spoke with Minister Little about all of that and a little bit more. Have a listen.
Good morning, Minister. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
That's all right. Always a pleasure.
You're starting to get through your Thursday Wire host now. I think I'm on your third.
It's all right, but it's all right.
I'll try to stick around for a few weeks, hopefully. I thought I'd start by talking about a couple of things that the Green Party have been taking aim at you for this week. But firstly, there's been this issue of foreign political donations. I was wondering, what's your stance on foreign donations being given to political parties?
Well, I think there's a bigger question, which is about, in this day and age, the risks of foreign influence in our political system. We're not the only country that's grappling with that. That's why the select committee that inquires into every general election, the Justice Committee, who are currently doing their inquiry into the 2017 election, I wrote to them to specifically ask that they look at the question of foreign influence and foreign interference, whether by way of donations or whether through other means. So, this is an important issue we have to get up with. I know the Greens want, that they've got what they think is the solution. I want the Select Committee to consider it and to hear from others about it. They are doing that, and then once they come up with their recommendations, we'll have a close look at that.
So do you actually think that New Zealand is susceptible to overseas influence, whether it's donations or otherwise?
I think every country, every democratic country is now. You look at what's happened in the US, you look at what's happened in France when they had their elections last year, or the year before, whenever it was, the UK as well. There's this real sense now that whether through manipulation of Facebook, whether it's through donations that are kind of pushed through various channels, to make them look like they're sort of internal donations, or donations from an internal source, whereas in fact they might come from offshore. I mean, those are factors that every democracy is dealing with. We will not be immune, and I think that's why it is time to have a look. To see whether anything did happen in our last general election, but also to make sure that our Electoral Act and the donations regime that is there is sufficient to deal with the modern age.
In terms of the bill that the Green Party are proposing, have you had an opportunity to speak with anyone from the party about it?
Oh, they certainly told me that they were putting up a members' bill that covered that point off. I mean, at the moment, we have a restriction on overseas donations in any campaign restricted to $1,500 from a single source. But I think the issue is whether or not, or how easy it is to channel donations from overseas through a variety of different ways so that it looks like a donation that has come from within New Zealand and is much, much greater than the $1,500. And I think, it is worth having a look at that. I think the Greens' position is absolutely no overseas donations. I'm sympathetic to that view. You do have to wonder why, in our democracy, why it is that we might have to source funds offshore to run a domestic campaign. And I think the Select Committee is well equipped to look at that.
Something else the Green Party are talking about at the moment that's referred to in that bill is an overturn of a restriction on prisoner voting. It's almost 10 years since this was restricted. Do you think we'll be seeing an overturn in your first term as Minister?
Look, I know the issue's come up and the Supreme Court has ruled on it. The Waitangi Tribunal is about to look at the issue. And we have a very heavy legislative program at the moment. I think the priority for me, if I had to do things in order of priority when it comes to what is happening to our general prison population, it is the fact that we have this massively increased incarceration rate. It's the fact that we have this gross over-representation of Māori in prisons. So that's with the focus of my attention right now. In terms of more generally about the Bill of Rights and the status of that, we've got legislation being prepared at the moment that means that when courts issue a declaration to say that a particular law is inconsistent with the Bill of Rights, then it will be compulsory or mandatory for Parliament to respond in some way to that sort of declaration, which would include, you know, responding to the recent one from the Supreme Court about prisoner voting. So, eventually we will get to the issue of prisoner voting. The reality is, to change that law, we need the numbers in Parliament, and that's how you get the law changed. And I'm not sure we're there yet. So we'll get around to that as priorities allow and when the timing is right.
Do you think there is an inconsistency between the current legislation and Section 12 of the Bill of Rights Act?
Yeah, well, look, the change that the National Party put in place, where they removed any voting rights at all from any prisoner, overturned a long-standing acceptance that at least prisoners on a short sentence should be allowed to vote, because if they're on a sentence of up to 3 years, they're going to be back out in the community, at some point before the next election. Therefore, they should have a say in who runs the country and the community that they are, a free member of. So that was a principle that we accepted right up until 2010, when a National Party MP decided that should be abandoned. So I'm sympathetic to that argument. There is a bigger argument, which is whether, every prisoner, regardless of how long a sentence they're serving, should serve. There is a debate that we need to have about when we incarcerate somebody, when we decide that somebody has offended so badly against society that we are going to deprive them of their freedom of movement, what is the extent of the loss of those freedoms that should go with that? And should that include voting, which is a basic citizen's right? That's what that debate is about. And I think we should have that debate.
And how do you think that debate looks? Is it something that just involves members of Parliament, who obviously aren't prisoners, aren't the ones that are actually going to be, affected by this sort of law? I mean, how do you think the debate should go?
Oh yeah, I think that's the the community should be involved in that debate, and prisoners will be as well. Prisoners. I get letters from prisoners literally every day about a variety of issues that they have. To be honest, none has written to me about the prisoner voting issue, but which is not to say they're not concerned about it and shouldn't have a say on it. But I think the whole community has got to have a say on it. It comes back to that question about when we deprive somebody of their liberty, which is the punishment that imprisonment entails, what is the extent of the deprivation of those freedoms? How far do we go? We limit their ability to move around. We limit them in a whole heap of other ways. But they don't stop being a citizen. And I think it's time we had that debate properly conducted and allowed all those issues to come into play.
Something else that's had quite a lot of airtime in the media this week has been around the issue of our MMP system. Do you think that we're going to see a drop in that MMP threshold of 5% anytime in the near future?
I certainly think there's a willingness to do that. We've had MMP now since 1996. There was a review, statutory review done, I think 2011. I think the previous government made a half-hearted attempt to respond to the recommendations arising from that review, which was to reduce the threshold, and then they didn't do anything about it. I think it is a question that that does need reconsideration. The government is presently considering whether that should be the subject of a referendum or whether we just go straight to legislation, which is another part of the Green Members' Bill that was put up last week. But it's unlikely at this point that even if we were just to legislate without a referendum, that it would take effect for 2020. If it took effect at all, it wouldn't be until 2023. But look, we've still to work through that detail.
I've seen some criticism from the opposition that the only reason the Green Party have raised this issue is because they're worried about themselves getting back into Parliament. Is that cynical? Do you buy into that at all?
No, the Greens typically poll reasonably steadily between elections, and both the Greens and New Zealand First always do better than their average level of polling between elections when it comes to an actual general election. So I don't think it is at all, and they're both long-standing parties. Well, they're both parties that have been around in Parliament for over 20 years. They've established themselves. I think that's a pretty niggly sort of thing by the National Party to say. It is about following through the recommendations that were made in the original Royal Commission report in 1986 about these thresholds. So I don't think there's anything unusual about wanting to follow through on on what is a point of principle.
Do you think our current system as it stands is strong? Is there anything you'd like to see different?
In terms of our political system, and I think we have a very stable system. I think it's driven by very good values, that when there is a change of government, that is accepted, and we get on and we kind of debate things. I mean, you compare that to even just across the Tasman, and the rapid succession of different prime ministers, different cabinet ministers, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, we are a very stable, secure democracy. Long may that last.
Finally, there's been a couple of legislative changes that you've been involved in this week. Firstly, blasphemy. It was technically an offence to publish anything considered blasphemous up until, I think, Tuesday this week. Why is it no longer an offence?
Well, we've repealed it, and then, look, the last time there was a prosecution for it was 1922, in a time when we respect free speech and freedom of speech, and we want it, and we celebrate it, and we welcome it. There shouldn't be a question about, you know, are you going to offend a particular religion about something that, you know, you might say about their God. So it was time to go. It's gone, and the sky hasn't fallen in.
And the Crimes Act as well, the year and a day rule has now been removed. That obviously meant that people could previously not be charged if someone's death occurred a year and a day after the act. What are the implications, do you think, of having this removed?
Well, it reflects, again, I think, the fact that in this day and age, you can be very seriously injured and then medical science will look after you, and you can linger on. You could linger on for, you know, months and years. If you eventually die, but your injuries are attributable to somebody else's criminal act or criminal negligence, then you don't want that person who did that act or was the author of that negligence to get off scot-free. In a way, that has happened with the families of the victims of the CTV building. We know there was negligence involved there. The building collapsed, and 150 odd people lost their lives. Well, those families are left with nothing. And the authorities have said we can't prosecute because of the year and a day rule. This law change won't help those families, but it will mean from now on, others won't be faced with that stricture.
Is this something you've been wanting to see happen for quite some time?
Well, I was certainly aware. It's an obsolete rule. It's been around for a long time. I guess it's like a lot of these things. It's there, but you don't ever think about it because it's never used, never comes into play. It did come into play when the Crown Prosecutor and the police were considering whether or not to prosecute over the collapse of the CTV building. And what they came up against was the year and a day rule. So that was just, you know, recently or in recent years. When that happened, and I met with the families twice to go through it with them, the promise I made, even though it wasn't going to help them directly, was that we would get rid of that law. We've done that now.
Minister, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Likewise. Talk to you then.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.